All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Did I say that right? SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It feels like I messed something up there getting that out. My name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. And if it is your first time watching or listening to this show, first of all, welcome. And second of all, this is a live open Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, whatever you guys want to talk about. I've been giving a little bit of my picks of the slate this week, switching it up, giving you guys some picks. I touted the Mavs win last night on stream, so hope you managed to capitalize on that. Might have another one here for you tonight. We'll see what happens as we go along. No, all jokes aside, answer questions here about how to use SaberSim. DFS as a whole, really. Questions come in through support at sabersim.com, email, live chat, YouTube chat, or the Office Hours channel in Slack. And if you're not already in Slack, you can join up with the link to join in the description of all past shows here on Office Hours. So let's go ahead. Let's not waste too much time here today. Let's go ahead and get started here. I actually only have, it looks like a couple questions, a few questions, I guess. But if you have questions for me, go ahead and fire away at me now. I want to start at this one here. This is from BMoreBZ. Interesting one here. I saw this one come in just 10 minutes or so before the show, and I found this one pretty interesting. And the question said, how do you feel about focusing on batter ownership as opposed to team stack ownership on slates five or below? I kind of get what you're going for here, right? Is that, you know, as the slate gets smaller, and we need to get a little bit closer to that optimal lineup to be successful in DFS, right? Some of our stack sizing it doesn't fall apart so much, but we're typically willing to play a little bit smaller stacks, willing to stack a little less. One, just because there's less teams on the slate, it's less likely that one team has that absolute ceiling outcome as the slate gets smaller. And two, as the slate gets smaller, smaller player pool, the lineups in your contests are going to approach the optimal. It might not be a nice and pretty 5-3 stack that takes something down. You might need to, you know, maybe it's a 3-3-2. Maybe it's a 4-2-1-1, right? These smaller stacks as the slate gets a little bit smaller. So this idea, what if we focused on individual batter ownership instead of team stack ownership as our stack sizing gets smaller? I mean, I think that's sound. I've been leaning a little bit more on focusing on batting ownership as a whole, more than thinking about my stacks ownership and really focusing on where I'm getting leverage on particular batters throughout the season. For a couple reasons. One, I have noticed that just at least in, I would say, my anecdotal experience this season, I've found that there's a little bit of an opportunity to get an edge stacking up the middle or back of the order on teams that are chalky. The chalkiest players on the teams end up seeming to be the 1-5 hitters, and you can get a little bit of an ownership discount on 6-9. Not to say that those guys are always great hitters, not to say I always want to go that direction, but one thing, by thinking about ownership on a per batter level, you get the opportunity for that edge a little bit there. One potential concern, though, like one thing that I think you should be wary of here, is that as you start to look at individual hitter ownership instead of stack ownership, you introduce a lot more noise and variance into the ownership projection itself, right? It's pretty easy to look at the slate that we have here for the main slate tonight, for example, and say that, yeah, you know, Angels are probably going to be the chalkiest stack, and you'd probably be right. That looks to be about accurate. But when you start trying to figure out exactly what ownership projection certain Angels are going to have, and is it really likely that you can get Andrew Velasquez at 25% owned, where Tyler Wade hitting one spot below him in the order is 19% owned, or even the Houston's a better example, right? Where you have kind of another chalky team, but you've got Altuve, Alvarez, and Pena as the three chalkiest hitters, right? And five hole, Yuli Gurriel is only 10% owned, right? That's a 2x difference between Altuve and Gurriel. And that might be very well what happens, but there's a lot more noise that gets introduced here. You are going to be more accurate just taking ownership as a whole on a per stack basis and then understanding who's going to be the chalkiest stack, who's going to be next, who's going to be after that, than you are going to be to actually try to assess ownership for every single individual batter on the slate. So I think it's a good idea. I've been handling things a lot on a per batter level. And if I see, you know, if I see when I run my research builds that Ohtani and Ward and Trout and Velasquez are all overowned, it's pretty clear to me that those Angel stacks are likely on the whole going to be overowned. But I've been handling things generally more looking at individual batter exposures than team stack exposures this season, just with that in mind. Just keeping in mind that you can, you know, you should be a little bit careful. I think, you know, you can use your intuition a little bit to check those situations too. Like if you're doing, you know, if you're doing some ownership analysis and you're looking at a team and, you know, let's see, let's look at the Braves, right? And maybe you're looking at this and, okay. And wait, you're going through this and you find based on your individual batter ownership analysis that Ozuna, Travis d'Arnaud, and Matt Olson are all going to be underowned, and Acuna, Contreras, Albies, Riley, and Duvall are all going to be overowned. Well, if you get exactly the ownership projections as they're projected here, you might end up just being right. And maybe there's a positional thing or a salary thing or a reason why the 3, 4, and 5 hitters on relatively chalky Braves would be underowned and 1, 2, 6, 7, 8, 9 would be overowned. But I find that unlikely, personally. I think it's probably likely that the Braves themselves as a stack are over or under owned as a whole. So that was what I would be cautious of there, is if you handle this at an individual batter level with no context whatsoever, you know, you can get some weird conclusions. You can get some results there that are going to be a little bit strange. Be aware of that. But I still prefer that direction on the whole. Cause at the end of the day, you know, stacks are a way of describing a lineup, but a lineup is made up of players. You don't roster the Angels, right? That doesn't actually happen. You roster, you know, a set of Angels players that builds up into a correlated stack. But at the end of the day, you're picking players. So, you know, handling some of this and doing some of this analysis on the per player level makes some sense to me. So good question. Thought that one was an interesting one to get started with here on today's stream. We'll go ahead. Let's hit this next question. I wanted to answer Neil's question here. What is up, everybody in chat? See, we got the crew here today. What's going on? So Neil said, just wondering if there's any particular reason that the default slider settings have a 500 lineup pool rather than 1500. We found that 500 is plenty of lineups. It's the perfect in-between for kind of the amount of exposure editing we found that a typical person does, along with the time it takes to build that amount of lineups and the value you get out of having that bigger pool. So that's the simple answer. You can build 1500. We've just found that most people don't even really need close to that. And it doesn't make sense to, by default, have the average person sitting around waiting for 1500 lineups to build when they don't need that many. So, but feel free to change it to 1500 as time allows for you and as you need. For baseball, a lot of times for me, just for what, like my baseball volume kind of looks like, I'll play 150 lineups on the main slate. Most nights when I play that 150 on the main, I'll build 1500. For any other outside slates outside of that, a lot of times I'm playing 20. So the turbo, the nights, the showdowns, that kind of thing. I won't build 1500 for 20. I'll just build, you know, what am I trying to say here? I'll just build, totally lost my train of thought, 500. There we go. Sometimes I see a question come in out of the corner of my eye and then I read it and I'm like, oh, interesting. And then I realize that I'm still on stream trying to answer the previous question. So apologies there. But okay, cool. So let's hit this next one. This is from Rogue. He said, when playing NHL Showdown, do you think it's better to stack the power play line or the EV line? Honestly, I don't really think about stacking really in Showdown contests at all. For the most part, mostly because, I mean, for a couple reasons. So one, the main reason we stack in general is to take advantage of these average correlations that like will, you know, on average, if a hockey game were played out over and over again, in the slates where the, you know, line one power play or the overall line one for the Avs went well, all of the guys on that line would probably on average have a good scoring day, right? These are like statements of averages, basically, is how the correlations applied. On Showdown, you're targeting particular game scripts and building optimals for those exact outcomes. So since you have to be so precise with that lineup construction, it doesn't even really make sense to consider that average correlation there. And instead, it just makes sense to, you know, build lineups for those individual single scripts. And that is what Saberzim does. That is why the correlation slider is off on showdowns. That is why Sim Precision is at 10 to use single game sims. So short answer, I mean, for all showdowns, this is not just a hockey thing. I would say I'm never really intentionally targeting a stack. And in fact, in really big showdown contests, like things for NFL, I actually think the field far overvalues stacking and assumes that, you know, the lineup construction that looks pretty and intuitively makes some sense to the person looking at it is going to win. And that it means you end up with, you know, there's far too many lineups in large field NFL showdown where you have the quarterback, two wide receivers, no opposing team defense, maybe a run back wide receiver on the other side and the opposing team quarterback. Like these lineups that are prettily correlated for some kind of typical result. And I actually think you probably get a little bit of that in hockey as well. So all of this is to say is that I wouldn't focus on trying to stack for the purposes of creating correlation in your NHL showdown lineups, because your lineups themselves will be optimals for individual game outcomes already, right? By default, that is what happens already. I would spend more time thinking about where can I get an edge in my selection of these different optimals from different game scripts, right? What Sabersim is going to do by default, it's going to rank the Saber score. And for showdown in particular, what that's doing is that is saying it is a some combination of what is the highest individual scoring lineup we have here, right? But also how frequently is this lineup optimal for multiple different sets of sims, right? So you have this combination of how frequently is this lineup the optimal in the sims and how much does it score when it is optimal. And that's what the best overall lineup is here at the top, right? You can add additional value, I think, by lowering your chances of being duplicated. We've talked a little bit about that on stream. Targeting game scripts that the field is unlikely to really respect or even give any, like lend any credence to and play, right? Or other ways of, you know, maybe adding value based on what your own research takes you. But I wouldn't focus on trying to force stacks. And I actually think for showdown, because I think the field will overvalue those, I would actually avoid them. And I would try to do weird things. I would try to build weird roster constructions that maybe don't necessarily make a ton of intuitive sense. So, cool. All right, let's get caught up on YouTube chat here. That's everything in Slack. We get caught up in YouTube chat. DG said, speaking of, what's the easiest way to get a lower owned part of a team stack? Is adjusting exposures the best way? Is there a faster way? Good question. That's a good question. I'm trying to think about like the best way to go about doing that. Okay. I mean, so I would say, you know, let's say you're looking at the Braves ownership here and you're bought into the story that's being told here. And I don't know that I am, but maybe you're bought into this and you're saying, you know, yeah, no, I actually really do think that the middle of the order, because of their price, is going to be a little less owned. And people, when they go to the Braves, are going to play, you know, the top and the bottom of the order. I think if you had a specific team in mind, right? We'll do another team as an example too here. I think one way you could do this is just give that team kind of a friendly bump in the spot that you want to stack them, right? So I like to use like 10% adjustments, which for baseball ends up not being very much. So maybe we give each of these guys like almost a half point, a little over a half point here to bump them up. And I think that's probably a good start. I think you could maybe consider bumping down the other guys, but I would leave that alone there. And then if we look at like Houston, right? Let's see. Does Houston look a little more stackable? So maybe Houston's a little more stackable towards... Oh, wait. Whoops. Yeah, not so much. I'm looking for a team that's like uniquely a little more stack-friendly at the bottom of the order. What do the Yankees look like? Yeah, Yankees are a decent example, right? So maybe you want to stack the Yankees at the bottom of the order too, so we can do a little bit of that there too. And this would be a good way to do this if you had specific teams in mind, right? So then we can build these and see what we're getting out of this on the other side. And I'm curious how this is going to work. So there's basically option one here is adjust the projections on the front end. And I think doing a little bit of a projection boost is going to help you here. But let's see what we get. And I think we can do some more on the exposure side here too, to dial this in a little bit more. Okay, let's see what those Brave stacks look like. Okay, yeah, so that had a pretty good impact, right? We're getting some exposure to Braves. Our most popular Braves are the 3, 4, and 5 hitters, which weirdly, again, seem to be the most popular or the least popular players on that team, which I don't entirely agree with. Didn't have exactly the same effect for the Yankees. We're still getting a lot of, we're getting some more exposure maybe to some of these guys at the bottom order, but still getting a lot of exposure there. So, you know, let's say now we wanted to take a look at the Angels maybe. Well, and actually let's do Houston. And maybe get some bottom of the order exposure, right? From here, we should be able to. Oh, this is annoying. Okay. We should be able to pump up the exposure a bit to some of these guys. So let's say we want a bottom of the order Houston stack. Maybe we can come in here now and say, 10% Maldonado. And now we're getting a little bit exposure to these guys down here. So maybe, another 10% for Kyle Tucker. Right. So I think, answer to this question, there's a couple different options at your disposal. I think using some combination of bumping up projections on a couple guys that you think are going to be low owned that you really want to make sure you get to, and then following that up by editing some exposure to specific guys in the order here should work out. And what's nice about this, again, one of the things that's nice about SaberSim is because you're working with this pool of lineups that's already correlated. You've got this 500 lineup pool. We're just looking for 20 that we can do things like say, oh no, I want 20% Jeremy Pena, and know that additional exposure that ends up coming in there is going to be in the form of a correlated lineup. It's probably going to increase your stacks of other low in the order hitters because of the correlations that are being used here. So pretty nice. I think I would use some combination here of editing projections and exposures to get those guys where you want them. So, Brad says, you think a research build is essential at 1500? Yes. And in theory, an optimal research build would be as many lineups as possible. The only reason it's 1500 is because, the only reason I build 1500 for a research build is because that's the max you can build at the moment. If it was more, I would build more. I want as many lineups as possible for that because I'm trying to simulate the slate is what we're trying to do, basically. The more data points in that sample, the more accurate the information is going to be. So Mark said, speaking of research builds, is there a way to do the trial of the fancy membership that lets us do a real research build? I think you can trial. I think you can trial the advanced. If you're on a starter, I think that's true. I might be wrong. Yeah, I think so. If you're on the starter plan, though, and you've been on the starter for some time, want to try out the advanced plan, see what it's like. I would also say, probably just email us support@sabersim.com and let us know, like, hey, I'm on the trial plan. I've been watching Jordan's awesome research builds on stream, and I kind of want to try it out. Can you reset my trial to use the DFS advanced plan? And you should be able to at least try a 7-day trial on the advanced plan and see what it's all about. So, but the support guys should be able to take care of you there. Ryan's got a couple prop plays for hockey tonight. Tarasenko and Buchnevich. Over 2.5 shots on goal, -125 and +140. Liking the Blues props. No Blues props in here. This is a Colorado Avalanche friendly zone. No, I'm actually not the biggest Avs fan. I root for the Avs. I live in Colorado, but I've never, as you guys can probably tell, those of you that watch this stream pretty regularly, hockey has never been the sport that I've been the most passionate about. But hoping it is the Avs year this year. So, okay. Rogue 3 said, how much do you factor in blowout garbage time minutes for 7, 8, 9 guys in NBA for showdown, Moody and Lee, for example? Yeah. So, the Sims will kind of take this into account for you at some level automatically. We'll look at tonight's game instead. Right. So one of the things that we have built in here, it's actually pretty cool. So we have minutes variance built into our sims, right? So what that means is we don't just assume the same player plays their average number of minutes every game and then simulate all the possible outcomes there. There's actually rotational variance in the game sim, right? So, you know, a guy like Bam, right, who has an average of 36 minutes played, right? There are sims where he's going to get 26 minutes because the game ends up in a blowout, and Deadman is going to catch, you know, 11, right? He's on average going to get 11 minutes. Maybe there's sims where he's going to get 16 or 18, right, based on the game script. And when you build lineups at the sim precision 10, right, you get optimals for those simulations included in the midst of all the other ones. So, you know, when we build actual lineups here, you can kind of see that you'll end up with some exposure to these guys here automatically, right? We saw this yesterday too. We talked a lot about blowouts on yesterday's stream here. And you can kind of see, right? Like, let's actually look at a bigger pool of lineups here. Let's look at our 100 and adjust a projection. We're actually getting a lot of Deadman here, but we can even take a guy like Caleb Martin, right? Who was only projected for 5 minutes, right? So these lineups here are probably represented by a game script where the game gets out of hand or somebody gets hurt. Or actually, I don't want to say that. We don't have injuries in our simulation, so I don't want to say that. But the game gets out of hand, the game goes down a direction, down a game script, and Caleb Martin gets extra run, right? So they're kind of naturally expressed here by default. I generally kind of just trust that alone. I don't do much above and beyond that. I would say one thing you can do here, especially if you have been very tuned into the particular series, you know, you've been watching the games, you're familiar with kind of how the series has played out here. I'm getting ready to move the start of next month, and I just have not gotten to watch like almost any playoff basketball this year, which I'm kind of bummed about. But if you're staying super tuned into the series, the one thing that the Sims will not pick up on is if you disagree of who's going to get that blowout run, right? If you think no, like I know Duncan Robinson got some minutes in one of the past couple of games here. And if you think no, that 5 minutes on average is actually Duncan Robinson's minutes to lose, that's where the minutes are going to go. If you give him a projection, right? Maybe you just copy the exact projection and maybe remove Martin even. And you are right, that you will benefit massively, right? The edge you will get there will be massive. But the Sims are based, we use a multitude of different data sources to come up with our minutes projection. So I wouldn't just do that willy-nilly or anything like that. I would feel confident about that. But if you are tuned into how those blowout rotations might look, that's one place you can definitely add value, is figuring out like, no, this guy's, I think actually is going to be the guy that gets some run here. Or maybe, you know, maybe it's not just Deadman. It's maybe Yurt7 gets a little bit more play there at the center spot or something like that. Like that kind of thing can be useful there. But assuming that our minutes projections are correct, figuring out who gets minutes in a blowout and what that game script looks like is what SaberSim automates for you. That is the hard part. That's kind of automated for you. The value you can add there is correcting it and saying, no, I think this is actually going to be the rotation, and it will plug that into the Sims instead and use that data. So, I think that, especially in playoff basketball, can be a really good way to get an edge. I think it requires you to either be pretty clued into the series or use something like Popcorn Machine, which can be a pretty cool tool, popcornmachine.net. And you can go in and study these game flows and rotations and see how teams played, right? So, I mean, you know, again, there's going to be some significant variance to these minutes based on the way that the game plays out. But yeah. And keep in mind too, I mean, I'm seeing right here, right? Duncan Robinson obviously getting in the game, even, you know, Highsmith, you're at 7 getting some minutes. Keep in mind, we're doing this in the middle of the day without having run final sims yet for this game. So I'm not necessarily saying take what we have here as fact. As information updates throughout the day and this final sims run, everything will get a little bit more dialed in. But I think that can be a good way to add some value there. So but 8-game set, I just limited exposure for the cheap guys. I had max 11% set for Moody, for example. Yeah, that's great. I got no problem with that. Manage your risk. All right. Guy will give us said Avs were my first favorite team back when I started playing NHL Breakaway and N64. That's awesome. Looks like some retro video game chat going on here in the YouTube chat. Cool. I don't see any other questions here. Anything else for me on today's stream? Kilo is here. Said, is there a way to create a rule for if player A is in the lineup, then use less than two players from a group of four players? No, at the moment. We've been calling that kind of like a conditional rule, and it's something that we want to add in the future, but there is not an easy way to do that at the moment, unfortunately. So my kind of stock answer here is that, you know, most of the time these kind of rules, right, trying to do this are specifically trying to, they are a, they're a heuristic, they're a rule of thumb that is intended to target correlation or ownership or something like that, right? Where, you know, you're trying to say so maybe for this rule, for example, if I've put player A in the lineup, don't use any more than one other player from this group of other players that are negatively correlated to that player, right? That would be one way maybe I would think about this rule being applied. On a traditional optimizer, you have to do a lot of that kind of stuff because there's no other way to tell that optimizer what correlation is, right? If you're using FC or RotoGrinders optimizer, right? They just have average projections. You have to say, here's all the rules that kind of make correlation. We know what correlations are between players. So if you are finding that when you are building lineups, there is negative correlation that you are not satisfied with, or you want to emphasize positive correlation even more heavily, while you won't be able to make this exact conditional rule that you are describing right now, one very simple thing you can do is turn up the correlation slider, and that will help. That will ease you more in the direction there. Then the question was also, can we get the rule of less than or equal and less than change to at most? Or what is the reason behind the way it's worded currently? I think it's just that those are like that's the kind of classic way that these operators are described, right? More than, less than or equal to. I don't know. I feel like at most is... I don't know. I feel like that's almost more confusing to me personally, but maybe I'm wrong. I feel like less than or equal to is like more clear. It's more like mathematically descriptive than at most, but in terms of the reason why they are, it's just because that's like actually what the mathematical definitions are of these operators. So that's why it was set up that way, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd be curious what other people think there too. Said, when it comes to showdown, I want to allow negative correlation, but only between a certain group of players. Yeah. So for showdown, it like particularly gets very interesting too, so our default settings are basically going to imply that you don't need to worry about average correlation, right? And you can just play optimals for single game simulations. And that's the optimal strategy, right? Every lineup you get built on these settings is going to be an optimal for a single game simulation. So the correlation of that game sim is going to be expressed naturally in the lineup. In other words, if you get combinations of players that look weird or look like they are on average negatively correlated, you can know that they are at least resting on the strength of at least one simulation where that lineup is still optimal. That doesn't mean you have to play that lineup, but I think that's important to know that that's happening when you're building. And if you want to emphasize correlation more heavily, I think showdown is a good example of where you could do that because correlation is zero by default, right? So if you ran sliders like this, for example, 5-0-10, what you'll get is that we'll build those optimal lineups from single game simulations will still get built. And then they'll kind of get adjusted out based on the average correlations. So if you're looking at a lineup like, let's see. So if you've got some, let's see if we've got, so this first lineup, right? So we've got Tatum and Brown who have a kind of a softer negative correlation here, negative 0.08, right? Well, this lineup might get kind of rejected by having a correlation value on, because even though it is an optimal, and in fact it is the optimal in this build at least, now those two players' negative correlation outweighs whatever they scored in the sim, and the lineup gets trashed. So that would be an indirect way to get what you're going at here. But anyway, the main point I wanted to make is that this comes up pretty often. It's something we do want to add in the future, as basically as a group that only fires if a condition is met. So build this group, apply this logic, but only when this player's in the lineup, for example. But it's a bit of an interesting technical problem for us, just based on the way that our lineups are built. So, but Guy Will Gamble said, would the potential resolution be to add some correlation to showdown build? Yeah, it looks like you were right on track with me here as well. I think that's a fitting workaround for now. HC said, I think Jordan may have converted me into MME. I've not played a single entry in a week. Wow. I've done the impossible. I've converted HC into an MME player. It's more fun. It really is. I have so much fun with it, with like the portfolio management kind of side of things. So, but I do, I mean, I've done the demos of the single entry stuff on stream here before. And I do think there is still something kind of fun about picking that lineup and then it being your guys. I don't, for baseball, that's brutal. I think it's so hard. Like, I feel like you have to, I don't know, single entry baseball is tough. I think basketball, it's a little bit more doable. I could see the allure of single entry in basketball. For football, I get it there too. And there is the rare sadder Sunday where I have something going on and I know I'm not going to be able to like build 150 or something like that. That I'll play a single entry lineup, but Kilo said, thanks for breaking all this down. Hoping to get in sooner next time to ask more questions. Got to go to work now. Yeah. Thanks for joining. And I apologize that I couldn't give you the exact answer you were looking for there, but I hope that was helpful regardless. So A-Lake said, when stacking in MLB, is it possible to have your lineup set up automatically to 5-2 for GPP? Not actually directly that. And that's kind of a hole that we're aware of at the moment. So there actually isn't a very clean way to say only build me this one stack type and nothing else, or only build me these two stack types and nothing else at the moment. You can use stacking rules to get close to that. But you'll have to rely on the exposure management in the build screen to get all the way there. So if you've played NFL DFS with us before, you know on NFL we have basic stacks and advanced stacks. One of the things we're planning on doing for baseball is adding in advanced stacks to baseball, so you can do this and basically say, just give me just the stack. For now, what you'll want to do is say at least 5 players from the same team and then at least 2 players from the same team. So say, you know, at least a 5-2. But then what you'll have to do is go in and eliminate your 5-3s on the other side. So kind of weird. And I know that's kind of weird, right? A lot of times I on big slates, so like last night we had a 12-game slate. A lot of times I like to play 5-3s, 5-2s, 4-4s, and 4-3s. That's kind of like what that's a lot of times my portfolio of lineup constructions that I want to play. And that's another one where it's a little bit strange where you just can't do just that. But anyway, if you got all the way to this point, then you would just go in, zero out those 5-3s if you don't want them, and you'd have 100% 5-2s. So A-Lake says that's exactly what I've been doing. Yeah. Sounds like you've got it then. Said, I tend to see that 5-2s have been taking down the 20 max in MLB. I would be careful with that too. In terms of first overall lineup, there's just a lot of noise in that kind of measurement and saying, I'm going to see what the first overall performing lineup in this contest is. if you can, what would probably be more interesting, if you really want to go down this path, I think it would be a stronger argument that a 5-2 is uniquely better than other stacks out there if you could demonstrate that they outperform in like the top 1% or in the top 0.1% or in the top 0.5%. Just looking at the number one overall scoring lineup is super, super noisy. So I don't know if any of you guys follow the DFS daily newsletter. It's a free newsletter that gets posted on Twitter and emailed out every day. And I like what the guy that runs that is doing, but I actually think that is that's the biggest mistake I see that person make as well, is it is an overemphasis on the number one scoring lineup as opposed to lineups that perform well overall. So DG said at least five, at least two, at least one, 5-2-1. I don't know if that would actually work, would it? You might have something here. The problem is I think the two stack satisfies the... No, I think you might be right. Maybe you're right. We're about to see. We're about to see. You might be right. In my mind, I was thinking that the two stack satisfies the one rule, but that doesn't work the other way around, right? A 5-2 gives you at least five twos. So that actually might do it. Look at that. All right. It's always a fun stream when I learn something new on the stream as well. So there you go. A Lakes. One more stack rule. At least five, at least two, at least one, and you're in business. I didn't realize that it would work like that. So I think it's definitely a unique kind of thing here where you're actually specifically trying to target exactly one stacking rule that you can get away with this. Either way, that's clearly still not very intuitive. So we want to add a more intuitive way of doing this in the future. Because I didn't know how to do that, right? Like, it's clearly not very helpful. So we are going to plan on adding something where you can basically just check and say, like, I want this stack type. I want this one, that one, etc. So HC said a two-man took down the 3-max on FanDuel last night. I was surprised, actually. Yeah, you got to be careful with that kind of stuff. That's like exactly why. Because there's even lineups that aren't correlated at all, that are 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1, have some equity in the first place position, right? There's some outcome that they score first place. So what do you learn from a lineup that is negative EV that on the one simulation, wait, not a simulation, real life. I always get real life and simulations confused. What do you get out of the one real life data point that of the slate that actually plays out where the negative EV lineup is the nuts, right? Like, what do you learn from analyzing that? And a 5-2 lineup's good. Like, I think I'm good with 5-2 lineups, but I don't like the idea of like, oh, a 2-2-2-1-1 stack one last night is stacking dead. So I don't like going that way, but because I guess kind of finish my thought here before I move on. The reason why is because you'll see if you did an actual EV calculation that lineup would lose more often than not, right? That lineup would be by definition negative EV. It wouldn't win often enough. So, okay, let me catch back up here. Okay, so DG had also said, if min uniques are kept at one more often than not, say in NBA, are your 20 lineups going to be one unique difference or will vary in general at one unique? I would say you are... Okay, that's a good question. I would say in general, there's a lot of variables that come into this, but in general, I don't think this is actually going to be very limiting at one. In other words, I don't think you will find that you have a lot of lineups that are built with just one unique different. In Showdown, in particular, you're dealing with a smaller pool of players, right? So, and as you build more and more lineups, it is possible that you're going to have lineups that actually do have just one min unique separating them. Counteracting that is the sim precision, right? As the sim precision slider gets higher, you're looking at smaller buckets of simulations for each lineup, which I think would make the case that you'll get more natural diversity in your build. It also depends on, you know, well, actually, I guess I kind of already mentioned that. So I would say in general, I don't think you're going to find that in most slates, if we just kind of talk about everything, that the min uniques one is actually limiting, that it's actually there's a lot of lineups built right at that point. The higher your sim precision slider, the less I would worry about it. But the smaller slate, the more I would worry about it. The less players available in the pool. I don't want to say worry about it. I probably wouldn't worry about it, period. But the more it could be limiting, the more it could be a factor. So, yeah. All right. Sim variance on 10,000 in real life.
Yeah, maybe. This is Sim Precision 1. Or no. Sim Precision 10. One sim sample here. We're looking at one lineup from our pool of 1,500. Brad says, Jordan's getting pissed. I can hear his scroll wheel through all of our bullshit. No, I love it. I love the days we have a lit chat going on here on the stream. I just got this mic just picks up everything. So you're getting the scroll here, getting the clicky scroll. So I am scrolling a lot, though. You guys are lighting the chat up today. HC said, should we increase the uniques then when we do it a 20 max or leave it alone? I actually don't think I've ever actually increased this. What is a pop filter? I got distracted. What is a pop filter? Is it like the peas? Like, because I know some of those do come through kind of loud sometimes. When I record videos, I can hear it. I probably do need one of those. Even if that's not what you're talking about, I need one of those anyway. But anyway, let's talk about some real stuff here. Now you guys are talking about Mike. So Rogue said, got to turn that noise gate down. I do need the foam. I could use that, but I do have the gain is down all the way. So it's as low as it goes. And I've got it in the right. Guy Will Gamble said, no, it's a filter or screen you can put over the mic so it picks up less noise. Huh. I'll look into it. I got to check it out. Yeah. Let's answer a real question here. HC said, should we increase the uniques then when doing a 20 max or leave it alone? So I almost never change it. I mostly leave it alone. I think you get a lot of the natural diversity, the inter-lineup correlation kind of gets resolved automatically with the Sim Precision slider. I'm somebody that likes to play in a super diverse way anyway. Like I like to play with spread out exposures. When I want to be even more diversified than I'm getting by default, I think it's a better first step to increase the Sim Precision slider even more. I don't think I've ever really found a slate where I had Sim Precision at 10 and still wanted more diversity on my lineups. But if you did, if you built lineups, 20 lineups, Sim Precision 10 there, that and you still wanted more diversity, then I think you could entertain the idea of doing a greater number of mid-uniques. So, Guy Will Gamble said, I use two uniques on MLB, particularly for FanDuel, so I don't get the same lineup with a different pitcher. Might be an old school heuristic, but I want to get more variety between lineups. Yeah, so, and that's another good point. It's not going to... This isn't really an EV decision here, right? This isn't something that is making your lineups more profitable. It is spreading out your risk. It is making the results of one lineup less correlated to others. It could make your lineups less profitable if you get extreme about it, right? If you put this at like 5, right, you are going to eliminate so many good lineups because you are forcing in this uniqueness between them. That at that point, it's probably negative EV to do that. But when you're talking about the difference between 1 or 2, I would say 1 or 2 in particular, even maybe 3 on larger slates, it's probably neutral EV. And it's just a matter of, or it's probably close to neutral EV, and it's just a matter of diversifying and reducing your inner lineup correlation so that one lineup's results are not so closely tied to the other. So I have no problem doing it if you want to. I don't think it's a must here. So Brad said, in what scenario would you think I needed to change that? I would say the scenario, the best example I can give is that if you're already building lineups on a first slate and your Sim Precision is already 10 and you want additional diversity between your lineups still look too similar to you, right? When comparing two lineups in your pool or when comparing a set of lineups, it still looks like you're getting too much of the same. They're too similar. That's when I would do it. But I personally, I haven't found that happens very often at Sim Precision 10. So. It was, to be completely honest, we added min uniques because people like begged for it. I think the Sim Precision slider basically makes it obsolete for the most part, personally. But it was a feature we added because people insisted on it. And so, I mean, my answer for like use cases of it is pretty limited because I don't use it very often. but I think it's kind of a good classic optimizer setting to have. Everybody has this. So it's useful, I think, to have it there, to at least have a, like a little bit of feature parity there. But I do think that it's a blunt force diversifier that, again, in the world of traditional optimizers, mostly came to being to solve a problem that the optimizer otherwise couldn't. And that was reducing inner lineup correlation. So. Yeah. And Guy Will Gamble said, I just hate changing sliders because I don't want to deviate from the optimal building blocks if I don't have to. Yeah, and I get that too. I think it kind of goes both ways. With the sliders, right? The reason when people come on and say, what are the best sliders? I will always say, just play the defaults, right? Like if you're asking me, what should my sliders be? I'm going to tell you, use the defaults. But if you have a good reason if you have a goal in mind to accomplish something with your lineup construction, the sliders can be a good place to get that done. Right? Or at least one of the options at your disposal to do that. Like even just on today's show alone, we talked about why you might want to increase correlation if you're getting negatively correlated players in your NBA showdown lineups. And now we're talking about why you might want to increase sim precision if you want more lineup diversity. And last week we talked about why you might want to turn down ownership fade if you're adjusting projections in the projections tab to account for ownership, right? So like to those questions, if I am doing this, can I move, or if I'm trying to accomplish this, can I move the sliders around? Absolutely. And I don't want to paralyze anybody from ever making adjustments to the sliders, because there are slates where I make those adjustments. But what we want to avoid is people going down the rabbit hole of thinking slider optimization is the key to beating DFS with SaberSim, because that part has already been done for you. Like it's basically assuming you have the average process. What slider should you use? Like the basic, not even, I don't want to say average, because that has a bad connotation. If you are kind of otherwise using the basics steps through SaberSim, I guess, right? You are probably best served using the default projections, the sliders. But if you are doing other things unique to you and need to get something else out of this on the other side, I don't want to paralyze anybody from ever making slider adjustments. So. DG said too high in showdown, it won't get close to building 500 lineups. Yeah, and that's just because there's less lineups available in a showdown that are literally the pool of buildable lineups is smaller. So as you force some away because of their uniqueness, it gets harder to build. So HC said, so if I wanted to try it, min of default one, no more than max of three. If I set it to five, my SaberSim blows up. Yeah, I would probably never go beyond three. Three would be my top end there on a classic slate. On a showdown, I'd probably stick to two. I just don't think you need to get that high. Like, I really don't. So. Yeah. Sounds like everybody's got a raising min uniques horror story here. I think we should probably just cap it, to be honest. I think that would make some sense, because I really do think like what this just goes all the way up. So yeah, this probably should get capped, right? That's probably not good. Oh, actually there it goes. But a cap of 10 is not very helpful either. Min uniques 10. I wonder how many it could build. Oh, actually it won't even let me. Nine. Min uniques 9. Let's see how many we can get out of here. A completely different lineup every time. Oh, it's actually okay. We're getting some lineups here. I don't even want to let this build for that long. I just kind of want to see what this looks like. This is hilarious. Min uniques 10 or 9. Completely different lineups every time. And what's funny is they're still going to be like pretty correlated and stuff too. Like you're still getting actually good lineups out of this. Yeah, that's awesome. A-Lake said, when playing MLB with a four-game slate today, would you keep batters against opposing pitchers? Probably not. Yeah, probably not. It's off by default. I'm typically inclined to trust this. You'll find that even if you turn this on, because the correlation slider is still so high, you're unlikely to really end up with that actually happening. Like, so to get, you know, just to think like,
So Robbie Ray, his correlations are so negative and so high for all the Oakland batters. They have to have such a spectacular ceiling outcome to even show up in the lineup with Ray in it for that lineup to get made with the correlation slider, that even turning this on, it really doesn't end up doing that much. So I leave it off. I basically let SaberSim's defaults decide if this is going to be on or off for me. But I would say even if you turned it on, you are unlikely to get them in your lineups. From the strategic standpoint, from thinking about less about like the practical side, more on the strategic side, I don't think having those kinds of lineups is a great idea. Just because there are so many with four games on the slate, there are so many good lineups you can make where you're not eating a negative 3.5 correlation in there, that I don't know why you would build one of those lineups like that. You're also, you know, there's enough teams on the slate where you're not probably going to worry too much about getting duplicated. So like getting really weird and off the wall like that is probably just not necessary. So I don't think strategically, I don't really want to do it. And from a practical standpoint, I don't ever turn it on, and you probably won't get any lineups like that anyway, even if you do. So, but DG asks a good question. Is one sim variance equal to 10% randomness in regular optimizers? I came from FC, so I'm curious. No, it's actually very different. So we renamed this to sim precision, but it's very different than what randomness does in something like FC. And to start, so you have to understand that, you know, when you're looking at average projections on something like FC, right, you have that one number, right? You have a mean projection for that player. And most of the time, randomness assumes that that player has a normal range of outcomes, right? It assumes that player's outcomes is a bell curve. And when you turn randomness up, you're essentially spreading out the standard deviation of that curve. That's what randomness does. And the reason why that kind of sucks is because most of the time, especially in a sport like baseball, players don't have a normal distribution around their mean, right? Aaron Judge's distribution is 10.75 points. Right? This is not a normal distribution. So what SaberSim does differently is we simulate out games thousands of times play by play. And that allows us to come up with these actual distributions for what can actually happen in that game and what their real ranges of outcomes actually look like. If we look at like a pitcher, for example, right, they're going to look a little more normal, but they're still not like a very normal distribution, right? Basketball, probably the most normally distributed of all sports. And you can still see some discrepancies there in outcomes of what the actual distributions look like. So what sim precision does is it determines how many sims are we going to look at every time we build a lineup. The higher this number is, the fewer number of game simulations we look at. And the lower this number is, the more simulations we look at. So at zero, you'd be using the average projection. Every single player would score their exact average every single time. At 10, it's a single game sim, right? We use a single game simulation for every single game on the slate and build an optimal lineup for a single game sim. So you might get, you know, Giolito, boom, single game sim scores 9.5 points. And Semien scores, boom, 18 points, right? Single game simulation there. And there's a spectrum here in between. So one sim variance is not all of the simulations, but it is a large bucket of them. It is a majority sized bucket of the game simulations. And you're looking at smaller and smaller buckets of sims per lineup as you move along this curve. DG says, so how much is the difference of 0 to 1? So we are planning on adding, I don't know that exact number at the moment in terms of exact sims. We are planning on adding that data to the app because it comes up all the time. From a practical standpoint, you can think about this as a linear scale. So I know that's not super helpful if you're asking for literally the exact number, but basically every single I want to be clear here, it is not linear from a number of sims level, right? It is not the same number of sims different between 0 and 1 and 1 and 2 and 2 and 3, but it is roughly a linear curve in terms of impact. So making the adjustment from 2 to 3 is the same in practical impact of how that affects the variance of your lineups as it is from 7 to 8, for example. And the reason why, basically, is because at very small numbers of sims added, the reason why this hasn't been added in the past is because
it makes it confusing. It's less intuitive that way, but we want to add it anyway. When you have fewer numbers of sims, right? Less, when you have less simulations here, each additional sim added has a much bigger impact. So I do know for a fact that the jump from sim variance or sim precision 10 to 9 is 3 simulations. So 10 is 1 simulation, 9 is 3, right? That is the smallest sized jump in terms of number of sims anywhere on this curve. And it is because changing from one sim to just 3 simulations has as big of an impact as any other one of these jumps. And as you add more sims, right? If you have 1,000 sims, adding another 5,000 doesn't actually make a huge difference to how players end up projected there. So you have significant drop-offs in number of sims here at the lower end of sim precision. Guy Will Gamble says, we can infer that 0 is all sims and 10 is a single sim. Yes, that's just a fact. That is true. Again, it is our goal to put the actual sim numbers up in the app. Because it gets asked all the time. I think it can be confusing what those numbers mean without a little bit of the context. And HC's over here. Jordan takes down everything tonight running 9 uniques. I just might. Maybe 10. Maybe I'll hack it and figure out a way to build 10 uniques. No, it's dumb. Getting tired. All right, what else do we have here? I haven't checked Slack in a while. Looks like Slack's quiet. So. Oh, Brad says somehow that's saved and he doesn't realize it. Yeah, that can actually happen. Oh, yeah, it is kind of happening right now. Yeah, I'll have to be careful of that. That'd be hilarious. Probably wouldn't be the worst thing for 20 lineups. Like, it probably wouldn't be great, but it could probably be a lot worse if you had 20. If you're playing 150, that'd get pretty rough. So. All right. Well, this was a fun one, guys. We are right at about an hour. I don't see any other questions coming in here. Appreciate everybody tuning in, being a part of the stream here today. We will be right back here again tomorrow. Same time, same place, 2 p.m. Eastern. And if you are watching this and haven't yet signed up for a SaberSim trial or haven't used a SaberSim trial since the start of this baseball season, go ahead and get signed up. SaberSim.com. Come check us out for a free 7 days here. We'll hit this last question as we're on our way out here. Jen said, so if the precision is 10, do we get 1,500 lineups from just one sim or one lineup from one sim? That's a good point, and I forgot to emphasize that. So every single time we build a lineup, the sims are re-randomized. So if you're even at sim precision 8, right, which is the default for this kind of thing tonight, right, we'll take a bucket of sims from our set of game simulations and build one lineup from that bucket. And then when it comes time to build the next lineup, we re-randomize the simulations and grab a different set of sims. So it is not as if we bucket the sims once and then build 500. We bucket them every single time we build a lineup. And that's true at 10 as well, right? So at 10, single game simulations, right? We will take a random single game sim, build a lineup, and then take a different random single game sim. It is not the same game sim builds 1,500 lineups. And that's an important point to make. So I'm glad you asked. And one very specific piece of uniqueness that comes up when you're looking at sim precision 10. So especially for like research builds, and this is only true at sim precision 10. I feel like I need a drum roll or something now. I like got myself all excited saying that. If a single game sim gets pulled in one of your lineups, it won't get used again, right? So like, let's say in your first time you build a lineup, you pull a game sim where their final score is Yankees 9, Orioles 6, right? Like that exact game sim won't get used again in that lineup build. There might be another game sim where Yankees score 9 and Orioles score 6, but that unique simulation only at sim precision 10 won't be used in the same lineup. So, and then Guy Will Gamble said, what happens if two simulations somehow have the same lineup as the optimal, assuming sim precision 10? Okay. So that's actually a little bit. So He said, Jordan's in my head. So that's actually a little bit different. That's like a slightly different. So that what I was referring to is the selection of Sims. So if that happens, we boost the saber score of the lineup. So if the same lineup is optimal for the same set of simulations, we boost the saber score of the lineup in the build screen, basically, is what we do. That really only happens in sports where duplication is likely in the DFS sport. And I actually think it's an interesting way of thinking about duplication. Like, that is actually why duplication is likely in some ways, right? Because there are the same lineup can come from the different sets of outcomes. It doesn't happen very often in classic slates. It essentially is it's mathematically very unlikely to happen in classic slates, but in showdown slates and like MMA and that kind of stuff, it can happen a little bit more. So we'll boost the saber score of a lineup where that happens. There. That is, and this is a can of worms here. So maybe I'll open this can of worms for you here, and then we'll get out of here, and I'll leave you some of you to ponder on this for the rest of the day here. In the research build world, Jordan's wacky research build world, there is a weird quirk there where, in theory, if you were to run a research build perfectly optimally, you would actually have min unique zero. Because if a lineup is optimal for multiple simulations, it's not just enough when you're calculating exposures to certain players in a research build to bump up the saber score of that lineup. That doesn't actually do anything for you. It does just for when you're just building, when you're building lineups, you're ready to enter your lineups into your contest. That's great. That's good. Saber score gets boosted. A lineup that's more likely to be optimal ends up in your pool of lineups. You're happy. Everything's great. For a research build specifically, you would technically want that lineup to actually show up twice. One for the first sim it's optimal for, one for the second sim it's optimal for, so that you can count that exposure to those players twice. And it's I don't think this makes a huge practical impact, but it is true that if you wanted to be perfectly like accurate with your research builds, you would actually want min unique zero to count optimals that were optimal for different sims at the number of times that they were actually optimal. So again, I don't think it really matters a bunch. I think if we actually had min unique zero as an option, it would cause a lot of issues for people who accidentally ran their lineups on zero min uniques and have dupes in their own pool. But if you were doing that, that would be the way you wanted to do it. So Rogue3 said, and I guess we have a couple other questions, so we'll finish up here. Rogue3 said, does sorting contest order on the fill entry tab still work in that it fills top down? Only if you're using the unique rank fill. But yes, if you're using the unique rank fill. So if you drag and drop these, right? And we take 20, right? And we use unique rank. Well, do I have a, I don't have a, hang on, I need 21. So 21, and now we can do this from the build screen, which is cool. What? Oh, this is the 9 min uniques build. Probably shouldn't increase the number of lineups in the 9 min uniques build. Let's increase it over here instead. Okay. So now we have 21 lineups. So for my couple contests I'm playing here tonight, right? So this is lineup 1, right? If I fill this and I fill unique rank, if I fill in this order, lineup 1 goes into the single entry. If I fill in this order and fill unique rank, lineups 1 through 20 go in the 20 max, and lineup 21 goes in the single entry. So for unique rank in particular, contest ranking matters. So. Rogue said, I've noticed that it reorders after I click fill entry with unique rank, and I'm scared it's not filling as I desire. So it's reordering. Like the list itself is actually reordering. If that's happening, I would use the report a problem link in the upper right and report that, because that sounds like a bug. That shouldn't happen. That's a bug too. Do you guys see that? Whenever I hit cancel on the report of problem, it says, oh, sent that over to the support team. But so Okay.
So it seems like there's also a question about lineup sets here as well. So Brad said, Rogue, I feel like I've seen it do that, and it may change a line or two because a change was made on some sort of projection. Let me ask that. Do the lineups still update periodically? Yeah, so anytime you return to an old build, we will basically kind of refresh the projections up to whatever the most recent sims are, right? But that doesn't actually overwrite anything. So your old lineup sets will still be there. So, like, let's say we came back to this build later, and now for some reason Bryce Harper's projection is 9 and this JP Sears guy's projection is 13, right? Okay, so this is now going to create it's going to resort, right? It's going to resort these lineups. There'll be a new lineup set get created, but your old one is still here. And if we go into if we open the entry editor, right, it's not overwriting what's actually filled there. So even though there's not a new build, but there's a new lineup set, right? It's not overwriting that. We will never overwrite your entries file with what's actually in there unless you tell us to. But it's possible that you may have a new line. You may be looking at a new lineup set the first time you return to an old build so that it updates with the most information. And you can you can see this. One thing that might be useful is take advantage of the renaming lineup sets tool up here and rename your lineup sets. You know, something like final lineups, GPP or something like that. I don't know, whatever you want to call them. And maybe even your build too, right? So maybe this is final build. I've noticed renaming these helps a lot for your peace of mind, but also just making sure that when it comes up to the final minute before lock, that things are where they're supposed to be. So you can see, right? Like this will never, ever, no matter what we do with our lineup sets in the actual build, we will never change what is actually here in the actual entries file. So. Cool. All right. Awesome. I think we're going to leave it there here for today. Yeah, thanks everybody for hanging out today. That was a fun one. Talked about all kinds of stuff. So it was a good stream. We'll go ahead. We'll leave it there. I'll be right back again here tomorrow. Good luck in your contest today. We had like a rare kind of triple slate day of baseball today, at least on DK. I know they had like the super early, the afternoon, and the main going on here tonight. So enjoy all the baseball slates that are out there here for today. I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Good luck tonight and take care. See ya.